I'm Afraid to Come Home in the Dark, sung by Billy Murray, Edison Records. Jonesy married Mabel.
Hello and welcome to Yesterday's Chip Paper Extra, the fortnightly-ish podcast where we look at the strange and the bizarre and the macabre stories that you can find in historic newspaper archives. My name is Violet.
And mine is Jim. And the format of our normal show is that one of us finds a long story and then tells the other one...
A long good story.
The entire story.
Not just long.
Yeah, based on the newspaper stories that they find. For extra episodes, we mix it up a bit because I've been travelling quite a lot and haven't had time to find any of these stories. So the way that these shows work, we each find three or four articles and we send them to each other and then we read them for the first time. So we've never read these before. You never heard them before, hopefully. That'd be some coincidence. If you have read them before, I will send you $100. So yeah, also I realised youth correspondent Jim Shaughnessy, there's apparently a really popular game called Fortnite.
Called Fortnite?
Like a video game? All the kids are playing. Oh no, trust me, I've seen it. So I'm wondering if our show description is getting some SEO and really disappointing some teenagers.
Why?
Fortnightly or thereabouts podcast. So they must be like, oh, super sweet Fortnite podcast. And they listen and it's just two dickheads talking about...
Is this a niche we should be tapping into?
What are video games and newspapers?
Yeah, just Fortnite in general. A fortnightly podcast on Fortnite.
I can think of no two more qualified people on the face of the earth than you and I. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. I think I saw it. Anyway, this started.
So what you're saying is nonsense, essentially.
What I'm saying is that I think we're duping an unsuspecting audience. But if you're tuning in expecting a Fortnite podcast about the game Fortnite, welcome. Please tweet at us explaining what it is. That's at Paper Podcast.
We'd love to know. If it's anything like Dungeons and Dragons, this might help. Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know anything at all. So, I think I have four articles this year.
Oh, I have
you
three.
You have three. So, do you...
I have three, but one of them is lengthy, so...
One of mine is pretty long, but I think worth it.
I still want to go first.
Okay.
I always want to go first. The first one comes from The Scotsman on the 15th of March, 1843.
It's old.
I feel like it's a headline that we've had a lot on this show.
I actually did not search by this headline, but it did come up a lot.
I was going to say, I always try to figure out what the search terms you used were to find these stories. So this curious accident starts... The following singular accident occurred to William Rogers, a labourer in the employ of Sir E. Smythe, Bart. In crossing the park on Saturday night, the 25th, he, in the darkness, lost his way and came to some wire fencing about 100 yards from the hall. Having got one leg over the fence, his foot slipped off the wire and passed between two others. At the same time, he fell... I'm trying to figure this out in my head. At the same time, he fell backwards, by which means the wires became twisted tightly upon his leg.
Yeah.
Although this happened about 7:30 in the evening, he was unable to make any... He was unable to make anyone hear and remained partially suspended until 7.
12 hours.
7 the next morning.
In March.
To add to his misery, it snowed and rained during most of the night, the whole of which he was bareheaded, his hat having fallen off. It rolled beyond his reach. In relating the story, he caused an involuntary laugh by saying it was the worst time he ever spent in his life, for he couldn't... The logic is so great. But he couldn't get a wink of sleep all night. The poor fellow is at present in the infirmary and fast recovering from the effects of being taken in the wires.
Right. Now, I don't find it funny that the man could have died of hypothermia or that he was trapped and it snowed and rained all night. That's terrible, obviously.
It's awful.
What I find funny is the mention of the hat rolling beyond his reach, because I imagine him watching it happen and being like, no. Oh. But then the hat just being within eyesight, but not within reach. So he's like hanging upside down all night. He can just see his hat. He's like, man.
He spends the first 6 hours kind of swinging towards the hat.
Yeah.
Unable to reach it. And the other 6 hours trying to get sleep.
He's fashioning a lasso with some vines and his car keys. Yes, I find that a very funny image.
I'm really sorry, William, but that's really funny. So my first story for you is...
Oh, good.
Just has the most judgmental headline I've ever read.
I don't think you've ever... I think the death quotient in your articles in these minis is...
Too high.
The high compared
I didn't
to
search
mine.
For death, though. Never search for death.
I mean, who does?
I can't
who
remember does? What I searched for this one, actually. This definitely wasn't what I was expecting to find.
What? Oh, my God. All right.
Don't spoil it.
The headline is just Man Deserves to Die.
From the Herald Palladium.
Oh, sorry, the Herald Palladium is in Joseph, Michigan. Tuesday, April 18th, 1905. Man Deserves to Die. Silly joke drove his wife to insane asylum.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like silly jokes, if they make the newspaper, they've done something bad.
They're not silly.
Paris, Michigan, April 13th. Oh, you see. A sad sequel was the result of a silly joke perpetrated last Thursday night. Mr. Edmund Lelouch, wishing to frighten his wife, dressed up a wax figure, the head of which and one of the hands he lightly attached to the body by means of gum and placed it in bed. While Lelouch was watching the proceedings from behind some draperies, his wife, about to retire, grasped what she supposed in the semi-darkness to be her husband's hand, but which was in reality that of a wax figure. The hand, cold and clammy, detached itself from the limb and remained in her grasp.
Nothing unusual there, she thought.
Wow, you're warmer and less clammy than usual. With a cry of terror, Madame Lelouch let the hand drop to the ground and flung her arms around the figure's neck. Why did you do that? When the head also became detached and rolled towards the door. The terror-stricken woman, uttering piercing shrieks, ran madly down the stairs, where she was stopped by some of the neighbours and detained. When the police arrived, it was found that she had become raving mad. Later, she was conveyed to the asylum. Asylum? No, he should have been put in prison.
Yeah.
He should maybe not prison. But she... I feel... When was this?
1905.
This is when... I'm pretty sure this is when we still put women in asylums because they had wind in their womb. Or, like, they read books. So I think there probably would have been a better place for her to go. Like, the lounge for a sit-down and a brandy. Or the local county courthouse for an immediate divorce.
I just... This guy's logic, again. What I really love is the logic behind the stories, the older stories. Quite often the shorter ones, because they're just, like, a little bit stupid. And you're like... You just had way too much time on your hands.
The level of effort.
I wonder where did he even get the wax figure from?
Maybe it was his mistress.
Ooh. No, we're not going there. We're moving swiftly on to the next story. It's the Dublin Evening Mail.
I've put this one in because this isn't funny.
This isn't another one of those ones that you put in because you're a child, is it?
I mean, by default, yes. But this one is, I find it fascinating. This is a real historical curiosity. Just read it, and I've done some googling into a bit of the science behind this.
Right. Okay.
So
this is Dublin Evening Mail, 10th of September, 1866, and the story reads: "Struck by lightning." A singular instance of the effect of lightning occurred at Woolly Range, near the city on Sunday week. Three boys named Edwards, Greener, and Jones, the first two residing in Cedar Street and the last in Erskine Street. The reason I'm sounding so sceptical about all these is I'm not 100% certain I'm pronouncing them right.
No, barely any of them.
You know, bear with me. Were overtaken by the severe storm which raged during the greater part of Sunday and took refuge under a tree, having... large overspreading branches. That's the wrong place. Okay, I'm going to stop here and tell you a little story.
Oh no.
About sports days in Tasmania.
Do you get electric shocks?
What? Yeah, that's how we perform so well.
Oh, the famous Tasmanian athletes.
Yeah, all those. But I was at a sports day when I was a kid. And then we were you know, played sport, whatever you do at a sports day. And then there was a lightning storm, and all the coaches went, guys, quick, get under the tree. And we're all just like, no. I'm staying over here, thanks. Because there was just this one massive tree in the middle of the ground. And they were like, quick, we'll shelter under here. And it was like...
This is the tallest structure on the island of Tasmania. This is the worst place for us to be. I've never been to Tasmania, just in case anyone wonders.
I'm going to go back to the story.
Okay.
The exact same thing happened to these three boys. They had not been long in shelter when a vivid flash of lightning illuminated the atmosphere, and the lads were more or less stunned by the force of the shock. The electric fluid seemed to have circled around the tree in a curiously serpentine fashion, and what was still more singular was the fact that one of the boys, Edwards, who had been curiously affected, presenting on his side the perfect image of a tree, the fibres, leaves, and branches of which were represented with photographic accuracy. The impression of the tree was reproduced in a less determined form on the lad's right side, that which, it would seem, had been less exposed to the power of the lightning, but both pictures graduated from the knee, terminating and joining at the apex of the chest. Jones appeared to have had a still more narrow escape from death, as the destructive fluid was attracted by his scarf pin, which was twisted in an extraordinary manner, and traversed his person, scorching him severely.
The thing that I find interesting about this is that's a Lichtenberg figure. The pattern on this kid is called a Lichtenberg figure. And it, in this case, in the case of lightning strikes, they're called lightning flowers, and it's your capillaries rupture. So it makes a pattern on you that looks like a tree.
I'm looking at my arm now, and it's your vein.
If you go outside and get struck by lightning and then come back inside and look at it, then we're talking turkey. But yeah, I find it fascinating that this article from,
that's crazy,
from the 1860s is like...
That's pretty cool.
And somehow, the tree and he became Juan. But it's just...
That is really cool. I found I didn't snip it, but I found another article that was talking about these sailors who were crossing from, I'm going to say, Iceland to North America. And they saw the Northern Lights, but they were describing them as like these snakes, these colourful snakes in the sky that were all these different colours that would just like appear and then like wisp away. And I was like, oh, that's so cool.
That's awesome. It's finding these things before people knew exactly what they were is just great.
Yeah. They were just like, ooh, curious happening in the sky.
Yeah, I actually saw one today that said, it was a photograph and the headline of it was success isn't getting to the head of these goats. And it was just some goats who'd won a competition.
Doing what?
They just won a competition. Like the goats.
How did they know that success wasn't getting
to them? I don't know. And the goats weren't...
They just weren't being dicks.
It wasn't that the goats entered themselves. So it was. So they're not aware of their achievement, I don't think. I don't think they appreciate what a rosette
is. What kind of award was it?
It was a rosette.
For being a goat.
Just goating around. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really good goating, guys.
Top goats. Okay. So my next one is from the States, the Statesman Journal in Salem, Oregon.
This one's just silly.
Silly and very short. Like you. Mr. and Mrs. Fake return from winter in California. Mr. and Mrs. Charles H. Fake and their daughter... Miss Mary Fake, are home from California where they spent the winter. Miss Fake, who went south last September, spent the first 6 months in Denver, joining her family in Riverside, California in March. Mr. and Mrs. Fake visited the home of their daughter, Mrs. Ralph H. Smith, Dolly Fake, while in Riverside. You've just done this because... this is like writing a screenplay and just forgetting that you've left a character's name as like Guy Everyman.
Yeah, I just read it and I couldn't stop laughing. Also, just the idea of spending winter in California seemed so perfect. I was like, Mr. Rooms is fake.
There's just faking around.
Everything is made up before 94.
Chucky fake. That's true. Before 1994, everything's made up.
Also, imagine if your surname was fake. It'd be impossible to get anything done.
Hi, John Fake.
No one would believe that you were for real. Everyone would think you were prank calling them. If you were like trying to arrange a delivery for a friend's birthday, like a surprise package, and they were like, oh yeah, what name do we put this under?
Fake.
Mr. Fake. They hang up immediately.
It's a fake name. It's literally a fake name. Yeah, no, I get that, but what's the real one? The real one is fake. It's like an Abbott and Costello sketch, eventually. It's like, who's on first? Yeah, but what's your real name? Fake. The fake name is real. Yeah, it's a real fake name. Holy shit.
You could just go on for hours. I should have put that story last so that we could have just carried on. But unfortunately, I've got to get to the next story.
You want to do like a vaudevillian riff on the name Fake for like 44 hours?
Yeah, just keep going. Be fine.
Yeah.
This one is from the Lincolnshire Chronicle, 14th of October,
1892. Certainly is.
A gruesome piece of furniture.
Mm.
Dr. Ambrose Kalacky of New York has in his study what is perhaps the most gruesome piece of furniture in the United States. He was presented with it by an Austrian medical student some 20 years ago. That's not who you want to be presenting you with things. While studying in Vienna, where he became an intimate friend of the young Austrian, who died shortly after Dr. Kalacky returned to the States. Is it his body?
I don't know, it might be.
And left him the strange and startling article of furniture by will. It is the skeleton of a very large man standing erect, with his right hand grasping a long spear. It could be his body. This is of oak, with a number of projecting pegs formed of the bones of the upper arm run through the wood, and it is used as a hat rack.
A hat rack.
Okay.
This is a man's skeleton.
In the centre of the skull is set a clock.
A clock.
The ribs form a cage in which Dr. Kalacky keeps his pet cockatoo. I thought I was going to say something about Dr. Kalacky staying in the cage. A splendid white bird with a light yellow plume.
Why does it matter what the bird looks like?
It's important. It matches the hats on the stand.
Yeah, maybe.
It is rather close quarters for the cockatoo.
Poor bastard.
But it is allowed a great deal of liberty, and when not caged in the skeleton... When it is not caged in the skeleton, it sits on top of the skull. Oh. The doctor has taught it to say, "We're only mortal."
We're only mortal.
And when these words are pronounced from the skeleton's interior, or even from the top of its skull, they are calculated to make the most volatile of the doctor's visitors do a little thinking. Many of his office patients have never seen it. Good. As it can be screened off at a moment's notice by a baize curtain.
Yeah, don't worry about the haunted skeleton that uses a hat rack to keep a bird in. I've got a baize curtain I can put it
Dr.
behind.
Dr. Kalacky, what's behind here? Oh, it's my hat rack.
It's an instant nightmare? For the rest of your life?
You know those nightmares you were having? Be totally fine.
Yeah, we call them Johnny Night Terror. I can't imagine more desecration of remains. Like, there's a clock in a forehead. You know, that's bad enough, because how are you getting a neat hole in that? And then the other one, the bit of wood, the pegs in the bit of wood are arm bones.
So what piece of furniture do you want to be when you die?
Ooh.
I think I'd like to be a chair.
You can't control who sits on you.
And my arms are my arms.
I would like to be something completely ridiculous that no one ever really uses.
Okay, like... an exercise machine. Does that count
that's
as furniture?
That's not really furniture. I don't think it counts as furniture. Also, that says more about you than everyone else.
I'm looking around.
No, I would be one of those fancy contraptions that you can use for hanging. They'd make these things where you can like hang a bike and then put your helmet on the shelf, and then you can hang a lock there and things like that. I would be a bike station.
Yeah, that is useless.
Well, for you. Also, don't leave me that in your will. it's a real you shouldn't have situation.
And for Jim,
yeah,
my skeleton, well, repurposed as a lamp.
My next one.
Oh yeah,
and final.
Final right. one for me.
Is this? Oh, okay.
It's kind of so okay. I snipped this one from actually. It's the same story from two different articles because the first one did a rubbish job of explaining what happened next.
Oh, okay, so this is from Council Bluffs Nonpareil, Council Bluffs, Iowa, Thursday, October 14th, 1943. And the headline is Man, Monkey, Met in Shell Hole. Bougie saved her master's life often. Okay. If it hadn't been for Bougie, there'd be a grave in North Africa with a private Floyd Stewart's name on. Why is that in quotes?
It's a quote from Private Floyd Stewart. As you will find out.
Oh, he's speaking in the third person. I don't like him. So Bougie, which Private Stewart...
He calls his monkey Bougie. He's not great at this.
Is they're about to explain why that is. So Buji, which private steward of Villisca says is Arabic for the great or faithful one, is now his pampered pet. 3 pounds of 9 months old rhesus monkey. That will rip your fucking face off, sir. Private Steward and Buji came together under rather trying circumstances. Both hit for the same foxhole somewhere in Tunisia when the going was really tough. I dived into a foxhole, landed in water up to my knees, said Private Steward here Wednesday. It looked empty. A few minutes later, after I felt something grab my arm, and it liked to scare me to death. I looked around, and here was a 2 or 3 week old monkey clutching my sleeve. We weathered that battle together. I picked him up, and he wasn't even a handful. I stuck him in my pocket. We finished the battle together. Right.
Just the two of them.
Someone was battling. Someone was messing around with a monkey. I carried him around in one breast pocket with a can of milk and an eyedropper in the other. He seemed to get along fine. In a few days, I found that he would set up one hell of a scatter when he could hear Jerry planes coming at us. Yeah, so should you. Oh, I see. He could hear them as they hedgehopped along to strafe us long before I could. I thought that, like, all the soldiers were just sitting there like, look at that coward monkey.
Dance, monkey, dance.
It got to a place where he could tell me when to duck. He kept me out of trouble many times. That's actually pretty awesome. And then the other report on the same story, in which there was a photograph of the monkey, and I might be looking at this wrong, but the monkey looks like Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand.
She looks like the author of The Fountainhead. The horrible conservative Ayn Rand.
Oh, I see.
It looks like it's got a severe
bob.
It does
have a little bit of Ayn Rand about it, actually.
Maybe Ayn Rand monkey.
I mean, given it's maybe about 15 pixels... Just a nice blotch of a face.
We're really paying for pixels on this one. And the guy's smoking, which doesn't help. Once.
Right in the face of the monkey as well. Look at that.
It looks like Ayn Rand. Hey,
he's like, come on, blow back.
She looked like Ayn Rand. Associated Press reports snipped from the Daily Tribune, Wisconsin, 1st of Feb, 1944. Once, Stuart related, she set up such a chatter at a waterhole where he and 14 other men were about to drink that they decided to test the water. It was poisoned. I think Buji poisoned it. When he was lost in Africa for days, the monkey found grapes and berries that sustained his life. What is this guy? Is this guy just like a soldier by himself?
But her most testing. He's a one-man army.
Yeah, I'm kind of just spending the whole war alone. Don't blow up my spot. But her most heroic feat followed the explosion in Sicily of an enemy mortar shell. Stuart was knocked unconscious and buried alive with the monkey beneath earth and debris. She scrambled out of the ground, he declared, and summoned rescuers with her violent chatter. Stuart, a native of Villisca, Iowa... now is home here with a medical discharge.
And a monkey.
And Ayn Rand monkey.
Honestly, I do love this picture of them. There's a picture of them together under the headline, Friends for Life.
Friends for Life.
And then the photo just looks like a warning photo from a packet of cigarettes.
Yeah.
You might, like, don't smoke near your monkeys.
Smoke and you might be visited by an ethereal Ayn Rand. But that monkey one day is going to turn around and bite his finger off.
Maybe. He was so... the article before it said that he was living with his parents and he'd given the monkey companionship of a dog. And he was like, yeah, they love each other.
I don't care. That monkey will rip that dog's nose off. That's what they do.
It'd be a pretty cool monkey, though.
It's a pretty cool monkey.
My last one. Is this the last one?
Yeah, I want to add a bit of context to this. So I was looking at stories about hermits. I find hermits really fascinating. Okay. And there was a hermit in Liverpool who died. One of the things in the article was concerning the headline of this article.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, but he wasn't guilty in this case. They just thought it was him and it wasn't him. So I went searching for the headline of this article and found it. And I was like, oh, great. This is a totally different article about a totally different incident that's exactly the same, but 10 years and 100 miles apart.
Okay. So this comes from the Leeds Times, 25th of September, 1897. And the headline is, A Coal-Throwing Ghost.
A ghost that throws coal.
So you search for a coal-throwing ghost.
Two different incidents come up. Possibly more. I stopped looking after page 3.
Okay.
This is actually genuinely quite creepy as well. I was in my apartment alone reading this and I was like, ooh.
I am in my apartment alone.
Yeah.
So, thanks.
That's right.
Jim. A curious haunted house story comes from Gravesend. Great excitement was occasioned on Saturday by the report of an extraordinary occurrence at 26 Rotham Road, a street adjoining the Kent County Cricket Ground. The house is occupied by tenement lodgers. Inquiries into the neighbourhood of Rotham Road elicited a number of extraordinary stories of a ghost, most of whose manifestation occurred in the coal cellar of the house. Ooh. Those stories were told by Mr. John Reed, a ticket collector of the Southeastern Railway. This ghost has chains too? And Mrs. Beadle, both of whom reside in the house. Mrs. Beadle stated that as she was sitting in her room in the evening, she suddenly saw a shoal of cinders fall in front of her window. Thinking that some of her children had thrown them, she went out to them. But they told her that they had done nothing of the sort. As she was entering the door again, she was startled considerably by a heavy lump of coal falling at her feet from upstairs. Becoming alarmed at this extraordinary state of affairs, Mrs. Beadle went out to see a neighbour on the matter. He armed himself with a revolver and accompanied her to the house. He went upstairs to see if any coal was kept in the bedroom.
Why would it be?
And as he was mounting the first few steps, keep it warm, by the fireplace, a lump fell heavily just behind him. This so startled him that he turned and fled. Mrs. Beadle then sought the advice of other persons living in the neighbourhood, who suggested that all the lodgers in the house should leave before anything else happened. One of Mr. Reed's sons, who was more enterprising than the rest, said that he would try and find the ghost. As soon as he started to go upstairs, however, he was pelted with coal, one nut striking him on the head. Nothing daunted, the lad called in a couple of companions, but on opening the door leading to the stairs, the candle he was carrying suddenly became extinguished. Reed addressed the ghost and asked him to throw the rest of the coal if there was any more left. Hardly were the words out of his mouth when a shower of coal was hurled at him, one lump striking him so heavily on the face that he fainted.
He was asking for that, though.
The reporter was informed that, although the house had been thoroughly searched, no explanation can be given of the mystery.
I have an explanation.
Okay.
It was a poltergeist. Come on.
Stop.
Come on. Poltergeist.
With Fuji the monkey.
Poltergeist. Come on.
Like, I get it.
I don't think your reaction means you get it. It's like a poltergeist, but I put coal in.
The coal being like what the ghost threw.
Oh, and God damn it.
Poltergeist being like a ghost.
I want the audience to know I haven't been sitting there for like 2 days. I just thought of it right now, but good God. Poltergeist.
No, that's good. I'm glad you put that story in for that.
I will put it in for that. But it's quite scary being like, I do like being like, hey, ghost, if there's any more coal in here, you better throw it at me now. And then he throws it and you faint. That didn't work out how you wanted it to work out, sir.
That wasn't a...
I don't know what it was.
What did the other story say?
It was that the other one took place in the street.
Right.
I included this one because I genuinely think that's quite creepy. It's the real good setup to like the movie Poltergeist, where a woman's sitting there knitting and then...
Starring
suddenly...
Christopher Lambert.
Oh, Christopher Lambert and Poltergeist. I stole that impression from We Hate Movies. I can't claim credit for that. But yeah, the idea that she's sitting there and then Cole hits the window and she's got such shit heel kids that she's like, that was definitely my kids. And then she runs outside and they're like, that definitely, why would we throw coal?
I would say, yeah, the balls are running outside. Although she thought it was her kids, to be fair. It's like, though, in the horror movies when the people are like, oh, there's something outside. Hello? Hello? And then they like walk straight out their door and they're like walking towards like the dark woods where they've like rented their house for the year. And it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Get back in the house.
The only walking outside I would do is to a taxi.
Yeah. And I would get the taxi to like park, like actually scraped against the door. So I don't have, like, there's no space for anyone else to get in between.
Drive straight through the fence. Just knock the fence down. I don't care about the garden. Drive straight through the garden. I want it to be like an airlock. I want to have to climb through the window.
You know, it would be a great scene if someone like orders an Uber in a horror film to get out. And then it's like, oh, your Uber's here. And it's like the driver is Poltergeist.
Colin Tergeist. Or they get a
Colin Tergeist.
They get a steam train out of there. And then they're like, oh, no, we're with tons of coal. And then the whole thing gets shot through like machine gun fire. Anyway, so that's Poltergeist. Stay tuned for Poltergeist 2 and Poltergeist 3, a.k.a. the ones that aren't as good. Did they make a Poltergeist 3? I think they have to have done. I'm just trying to think of Poltergeist storylines now. We need to stop. So that is everything.
That's for another podcast.
That's everything that I brought.
That's everything that I brought.
This miniature episode. All right, great. Well, we'll be back in a couple of weeks with an actual sized episode. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please do take 2 seconds to go over and review us on iTunes. It really helps us.
Yes, it does. And everything that we use for the researching of this podcast can be found in the episode description.
You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Paper Podcast, and we are at chippaperpodcast@gmail.com. Playing us out is something that I haven't found yet, but it will be from the Free Music Archive. So thank you very much to the Free Music Archive.
So we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Thanks.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Cultigust.
That was the sound of a cultigust.
Listen here, I'm afraid to come home in the dark.